have two issues to talk about today. So when we started to talk about Mishasa, so the question of Mishasa, when somebody sicks an animal on someone else, so what exactly is the liability for that, or is there a liability for that? So we had to break it down into two parts, because there are potentially two guilty culprits, depending on the circumstance. Let's assume that Reuven sicks Shimon's dog on Levi. So you have one victim and two people who may have some role here in the offense. So, and let's assume, like when they discussed at the beginning of this case, when the dog bites this person, he does damage to his clothing and he also does damage to his body. So what are the potential chiyuvim here? So one question was the sicker. Is that a word? The misayik? The bal hasik? So the one who does the sicking, so is he chayiv? So we saw that really that should be a grama, it sounds like. It sounds like it's causational. Now what does it mean to call it causational? So it means, just to reemphasize, it means a technical ptur, but certainly not a moral ptur. And therefore, is chayiv b'dei shamayim. And if you're chayiv b'dei shamayim, so then you can find circumstances where you actually are asked to pay it, because presumably the victim is not going to forgive if he doesn't get some kind of compensation. And we assume, as a matter of later halachic policies, the Gaonim and otherwise, that the tzibur can influence the offender to make things right with the victim. So, a technical ptur, but other avenues to consider. That's assuming it's a straight-out grama. It may be more than a grama, what we call a garmi. Again, God willing, hopefully we'll be able to talk about Garmi head on. But let's assume there are many different possibilities, but just we're to work with one possibility here. Let's assume that a grama is something which is too unpredictable by its indirect nature. So we can't hold somebody liable for that. But if it's a little more predictable, or if it's a little more direct, so then it's more. What is more? So a category called garmi, where there is a chiyuv, which mentions the machlokes who shown them whether it's a chiyuv drabanan, a chiyuv darais, a knas, but some type of chiyuv. So in that situation, so that might be the category here also, because the Rush had a different understanding of the issue than Rashi and Tosis. That the issue, as he understood it, was that when a third party tries to provoke the dog, so who knows whether he's going to be able to really influence this dog. But when the owner of the dog tells it what to do, that's a much more predictable scenario. It seems to be a garmi situation. So another detail that's important to keep in mind here. Hi.
So it's that the mishasa is pater not because it's grama, but because it's just suffix. Or is it because?
Well, the grama might be because of suffix. Suffix, you know, when we use suffix, we normally mean it in other kinds of contexts. Like we don't know what happened. We don't know what the story is. The question is, why is grama pater? So there are many ways to explain it. One way that you find is that, because of the indirect nature of how things happen, it may not actually happen. That may or may not be the definition of Hilchos Shabbos. Also, it's a much wider sugya. But just for the sake of simplicity now, let's pretend that that's the only way to look at things, even though there are many others. Let's assume that it's because there's not a real direct connection between what you do and what happens. But theoretically, there can be circumstances where, even though it's still somewhat indirect, it's more of a connection, either because it's more definite, more predictable, or a little more direct than it usually is. So those circumstances seem to be in this garmi category. And Garmi is a chiyuv in any one of those three understandings of what the chiyuv is. So when you sick your own dog, which is the scenario we're talking about, it could be, according to the Rosh, that's a Garmi, and there would be a chiyuv. Hi, Maury.
But not sicking someone else's dog. That's never going to be.
Right, sicking someone else's dog, it seems that at most will always be a grama. But again, we shouldn't forget that the grama comes with a strong moral responsibility.
That's a general rule by any...
That's usually what it means. Chayvidei Shemayim, essentially, that it's a moral response. I mean, it also means you're going to literally pay a price in Shemayim, presumably. But
you're not really off the hook over here.
Right. What it means is they're not really off the hook over here, which could mean, let's say, two things. One, that maybe even a Beis Din will actually put pressure on you to do something. And even if a Beis Din does not put pressure on you, it's still clearly the right thing to do.
I know that's a broader picture, but what could Beis Din
Day right, but Bezdin could say that, listen, if you don't make things right with the victim, you're on nidui.
It's more of a topic in
chilah. Right, now the victim can be moichel however he wants, but he has the right to say, listen, how could you ask me to forgive when you caused me real monetary damage and real physical damage? If you want to be sincere in your apology, you got to do something. And if he asks for a million times, then it's not going to be reasonable. But if he asks for something that is close to the actual damage, and he says, listen, I'm not trying to be cruel or extort you, but how could you want me just to forgive when I have all these doctor's bills and you're not helping? So then that's legitimate. I should say, actually, doctor's bills are a little murkier. Well, but that's whether there's a chiyuv letzos day shamayim or not. Let's say at least the nezek here. So that's in terms of the mishasa, in terms of the one who's doing the provoking. What about the Baal HaKelev? So the owner of the Kelev, is he Chayev? Yes. No. Now let's assume for a second it was a third party who provoked the dog. So the owner of the Kelev, is he chayiv?
Maybe.
It's a good answer. You can't go wrong with that. But the Rambam, right? The Rambam writes, what's he chayiv? Chatzi nezek. And it seems like this is some kind of in-between category where he says that really it was somebody else's fault for setting this dog off. But the Bailim have to feel some responsibility for having this loaded gun around that somebody else can pick up and shoot. So therefore, it's appropriate for Chatzi Nezek to be paid. Maury?
It's fine. Maybe we consider that it looks a lot more like Knas. It may just be something about, I need to, you know, Knas was my fault, but had I been on top of my dog, would it have worked if the guy wanted to like that?
So it's an interesting question. What exactly is the explanation of the Rambam? So, and this is one of the things I wanted to call your attention to. So the Ravid comments, and it's not clear how much of a machlokas this is. The Ravid there comments, he says, but if it was muad, if it was known to be a dangerous animal, then he's chayiv nezek shalom. And there is a discussion in the later Svarim, or the earlier later Svarim, whether the Rambam disagrees with that. Is the Rambam being modified, that yeah, he meant just dam, but you're right, Taka, if it's an animal that is more known to be dangerous, then there should be nezek shalim? Or does the Rambam cap it at chatzi nezek no matter what? So this, if you get a chance to take a look, and again, it'd be good if you can look at these things today, so the Magid Mishnah assumes that he caps it at a half nezek, and the Yamshel Shlomo felt differently. He felt that even that in that circumstance, the Rambam would agree that it's nezek shalom. So, what do you think is the machlokas there? Let's say if I take the Ravid's position and the Yamshel Shlomo's position, it's a little easier to understand. But let's say, assuming the Magid Mishnah's position and the Rambam, that it's always capped at Chatzi Nezek, even if you're dealing with essentially a Mu'ad. So why should that be? Why is that the case here? And I'll just give you a framework. There probably are at least two ways you can understand it. Why should it be? The Rambam's position that if somebody else provokes your dog to go damage something, you are limited to a chatzi nezek, and according to the Magen Mishnah, even if the animal is known to be dangerous. So one position to take, is how some understand, is that it doesn't matter that the animal is dangerous. Lamaisa, he didn't do this on his own. So the shisui was a relevant factor, and you can't consider that a part of the mu'ad nature of the animal. And if the animal is acting based on some kind of external reason, external provocation, so then you can't say that that is a chelek of the mu'ad nature. That's something else. Hi.
It makes sense, because it would seem like it would cause random
carrying, which would be chatzinesic, no? You mean that it becomes mishunah because of that?
Yeah, well, if we're maybe going off of Barsky, says that it's like a chiddush in its mind to do that, you know?
Okay. Could be. Could be. It gets a little hard to get to figure out where the mishunah is flying off to, but it could be.
Is that maybe so? No,
there's some swarms say like that. The Stipler has a discussion about this later on in Bava Kamma, where the sugya of Mashas is in the second parak. Gave you that in the Makaris, I think. So over there, by its nature, we're going to have to, in our efforts to try to concretize the Gemaras into actual cases. So by its nature, the actual cases are going to involve other elements, and the other elements are going to require us to borrow from later Gemaras and dealing with them. So that's like we're seeing here, that if we want to talk about animals biting, which is a Gemara in Beis and Midbeis, we're going to have to also bring in sugyas like Mishasa, which require us to look a little bit later on. So the Stipler over there on that Gemara has a discussion about this, and he suggests, this may sound the exact same as what we're saying, but I think it's different. It is different. He's saying that ultimately the Rambam is capping it at a half nezek because you're only responsible for half of the nezek. That this is a joint project between the one who provoked the dog and the one who owns the dog. And therefore, it's a chatzi nezek for that reason. It represents his involvement in the picture, which is as a partnership. So that's the language actually the Stipler uses. He says it's a chiyuv shel shutfus, that there is a partnership in this nezek, and that's why it's chatzi nezek. Not for the other reasons that we find chatzi nezek sometimes invoked, but because it's you're a part of it, and therefore that's going to be 50%. Roy?
Does the Rambam say that the book chatzi nezek?
So no, because the problem is you still have the grumma component for the other guy. The other guy still has the technical p'tur, but the chatzi nezek that goes to the owner of the kalav seems to be because that's how Stipler understands that it's only because he has a limited role. Hi.
And how does he handle the guy who's
Mishasa? So the guy who's Mishasa would seem to be Pater El Tzgrama. But the Gemara raises this question. The Gemara raises the suffix about the Baal HaKel. Gemara says, okay, so the Mishasa, that's got one story, but what about the Baal HaKel? So the Gemara asks that question, and the Gemara doesn't make it clear to what level he's chayiv. So the Rambam puts in that it is a half nezek. Yes, sir, Sammy.
What if you're in a Rishusa Mazek? What's the status of the dog owner in that case?
So the dog owner.
Like you're hosting a barbecue or whatever, right. And some guy says, oh, go bite that kid, and then the dog goes and bites the kid.
Sounds like it would still be the same thing because the Mishasa part is still going to be a foreign element. That's what it sounds like.
So why? I just don't understand why there's even machayev on the owner of the dog.
Because it's like mamono shehizik. Just this is a gemara. Just if you haven't seen it, you should see it now. It's a chok gimel amid beis, about a quarter of the way down. Shisa bo'os a kelev. Shisa bo'os a nachash pater. So man pater, mishasa pater. V'chayev bal kelev. And then the gemara goes on to talk about chatzar amazik and chatzar nizik. Should take a look over here. Okay, so if you haven't seen the Gemara yet, take a look at this Gemara in Rechav Gimel Mubeis. So, those are some of the possibilities in terms of the Mishasa and in terms of the Baal HaKelev. But we should also clarify, so in terms of the Begadim, so that's where we have this whole discussion. What about the medical bills? So the medical bills are a little more complicated. Because, I think we mentioned this the other day, but if not, we'll mention it now. I definitely gave you some sources just to highlight this idea, that the Torah is Mechayev Adam HaMazik in the five Teshlomin, Adam HaChovel, rather. Adam HaChovel and somebody else, somebody causes physical injuries, the Torah says there are five things that he's Chayev in. So the Gemara says in a few places that that is a Chiyuv only on Adam, and not on an animal. So somebody who's looking at this from the perspective of the Baal HaKelev, the Baal HaKelev is not going to be chayiv in the medical bills. So this discussion was only in terms of the clothing, the physical damage, the material damage. In terms of the Mishasa, if we say the Mishasa is chayiv, say through a garmi possibility, so then it could be that he's like an Adam HaMazik, and an Adam HaMazik, then there's what to talk about in terms of the medical bills. So in addition to all the other nuances of this discussion, it also affects what exactly are we considering in terms of the chiyuv here. Are we considering all of this damage, the physical, personal damage, and the material damage to the clothing? Or do we have to just look at the material damage to the clothing because the other tashlumei chavala are not relevant to you? And I think I also mentioned to you that within tashlumei chavala, when they are reckoned, so still each one of the five is what to figure out whether it's something our contemporary Bati Din take on or not. Okay, so far so good. So I think that's basically what I want to say for now about this issue. You know, come up again in different Gemaras and we'll revisit other parts, but that's as far as we want to say about that. So just to say a few words about the seasonal topic. And here, since if you haven't seen the Makaros yet, so I'll just tell you about the issue, and you'll, God willing, be able to go back to the base Medrash and look into these sources inside. So as you know, we are now saying Mashiv HaRuach Umari Tagashem and adding that into our Shmona Esrei. So there is a halacha, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. This is in the end of Siman Kuf Yudalei, that if somebody forgets to say Mashiv HaRuach, so we require you to go back. It's a crucial part of Shmona Esrei. What happens if you don't remember whether you said it or not? Sorry? Ah. Ah, okay. That's an important detail. So it depends. If it's within the month of initiating a change like this, so we always assume that if you don't remember, then you did whatever your habit was. So within 30 days, your habit is whatever it was before that. So we were not saying Mashiv HaRuach before Sukkot. So we have to assume that you did not say it. If you've been doing it for 30 days already, then we can assume that is now the Hergel. And you're allowed to rely on that, then you don't go back. So the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah quote an idea. They don't tell you that the whole concept is very strongly rooted within Bava Kama. But they quote an idea that if you recite the section with Mashiv HaRuach, say Mechalka Chayim Mechesed, up until Mashiv HaRuach, if you recite that part 90 times in a shorter period of time, maybe you do it all in an hour, or you do it before the 30 days are up, so that can advance the process, and at that point already you can consider yourself habituated and you don't have to repeat. And indeed, some people have this practice. I remember seeing my wife's family do this. They would sing on Sukkah, sing on Shemini Atzeres. Have a long song at the table where they recite this part, so they'll do it 90 times. So, why should this work? Does this work? So the truth is, it's a machlokas rishonim. And it all circles around a Gemara in Bava Kama, which is later, which is on Chav Gimel Chav Dal. Chav Gimel is the same daf with the Meshasa, but at the bottom here. And Chav Gimel Bay is the top of Chav Dal and Mar Aleph. It's relevant to Gemara's on daf Bay's and Bay's also, so we're not just completely flying off on a tangent. But it has to do with our concept of a Shor Muad. So we know that in order to establish a shor as muad, so it has to gore 3 times in 3 days. That is the Mishnah here on Daf Chav Gimel Amud Beis. So the Gemara records a machlokas right after that Mishnah. What if it doesn't necessarily do it in 3 days, but it does it over 1 day? So says Reb Meir, well, it would seem that that's even better, meaning worse. That's even stronger in establishing its status, because the line here is Richek Nigechosav Chayev Kirev Nigechosav L'Kol Shekein. That if it establishes the status when it gores 3 times over 3 days, so if it does it in a shorter period of time, it would seem like it's a Kal V'Chomer, all the more so. So that's the proof for this position, because if you look in the Tur, which is also on the Makaris, you see the Tur quotes that this idea of concentrating the process of contracting the time period, this Maram Rutenberg had done, and it's based on this idea. If you do it in a shorter period of time, all the more so. So Rabbeinu Peretz was a Tosos Rabbeinu Peretz in Bava Kama. Rabbeinu Peretz over here, he disagrees with that. So what do you think? Is it a compelling comparison? To say that, I mean, in the case of Shor Muad, who would you vote like? Right, so that's one question. You'll take a look. I don't think I put it on the list, but if you take a look, the Magen Avraham on the Shulchan Aruch raises a question about how much we align with the Pesach and the Gemara. That's also a question. But just the comparison to Shor Muad, and not forgetting Mashiv HaRuach, setting aside their incredibly different contexts, but other than that, the spirit of Kol Torah Kula Inyan Echad, is it a valid comparison? What do you think? Sam?
You just take the concept as a concept, then why not? Take the concept from the previous Gemara, the Shor Muad. If it's a general concept, not necessarily always applying to short, then it would work.
Okay, now the idea, like I mentioned a second ago, Kol Torah Kula Inyan Echad, so we always feel like we can borrow from one area of halacha to the next. And I'll tell you also, I didn't put so many sources on like this, and we could put more, there are a number of Gemaras and Shas in completely different areas of halacha, such as Nida, and such as a little bit closer to this, Cheskas Gimel Shanim, by establishing ownership of a house, where there are comparisons drawn to Shor HaMuad. So I have no problem comparing Shor HaMuad to other areas of halacha. But the question is it a fair comparison here? Does it really match? Do the two concepts correlate? Who's up first, Sammy? Okay, Jed. What do you think?
So I was thinking that like Muad sort of, the Gorns reveal a nature that already existed versus Meshiva Ruach, which is to create a nature, to nurture.
Okay, so that's the question. That's the objection that many have, and that's what seems to be Rabbeinu Peretz's objection. There's a discussion about this in the Stipler also. A number of Achronim talk about this. That maybe there is a fundamental difference here. That we have to try to figure out what exactly is the point of allowing X amount of times to pass here, whether it's 3 times or 30 days or 90 times to the 30 days. So is it that we are trying to figure out if something is there, and once we've seen it happen enough times, then it's clear that it is there? Or are we trying to impose a new circumstance? Are we trying to create a reality by having it take place enough times that it now becomes the case? Sammy?
I just feel that's, if I understand this correctly, it is a tough comparison to make, because when we talk about tefillah, like that puts that like questions the whole concept of, I mean, on a much broader level, it questions the concept of tefillah itself, because it's like, I'm saying these words so that this will happen, and if I don't have a chazak, that'll happen. Maybe it won't be rain. Like, how do we bring that into the same situation as a shore?
Well, here, but we're not necessarily talking about the effect of our tefillah. We're talking about just in terms of our obligation to say something, and when can we be confident that we have or haven't said it. So that, the impact, whether it'll bring rain or not, that's out of our hands. But maybe we have to figure out, in both of these cases, what category does it apply to? Are we trying to reveal a reality or to create a reality? It means that we want to know, are you habituated to say Mashivuach Amarit HaGashem? Because if you don't remember whether you did or didn't, so then we'll fall back on whatever your habit is. So what is your habit? So before 30 days, your habit is to do what you were doing before. And after 30 days, we can assume you're on the new habit now. So this 30 days, is 30 days about trying to reveal what your mindset was like? Or is it about creating a new mindset? And when it comes to the Shor HaMuad, the 3 times to the Shor HaMuad, is that about making the shore into a dangerous shore? Or is that about confirming the existing fact that the shore is a dangerous shore? What would you say in either case? Let's say, take it one at a time. In the case of the shore, what do you think? Is it about the shore becomes violent because he gores 3 times? Or the shore was always violent, and we now know that because of the 3 times? So Jacob votes for the latter. It's not 100% definitive one way or another. So I also put a Tosfos on our daf in Beis Amid Beis that's relevant that you can look at afterwards. But it seems more likely that that's what it's about. It seems more likely that it's about establishing that he was always a dangerous shore. Now, what about when it comes to the Mashiv HaRuach HaMarit HaGashem situation? Is it about revealing what your mindset was like? Or is it about creating a new habit? Which happens after enough times of having done something. Sounds like it's the latter. Right? Again, I think you could maybe quibble with each part, but if I had to vote, I would probably vote for the case of Shor Muad. It's about revealing what's there. I would agree with Jacob on both points. The case of Shor Muad, it's about revealing what's there. And in the case of Mashiv HaRuach, it's about creating a new habit. So if that's the case, so that sounds like that's what's bothering Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, that this is not comparable. That when you're trying to establish that this is a violent shore, so yeah, it sounds like a Kal Vachomer. That if it does damage over the course of 3 days, then we call it violent. So then, all the more so, if it does that much damage in 1 day, so then we'll call it violent for sure. While when it comes to Mashiv HaRuach, it doesn't seem like that's what's happening. It seems like we need to create a new habit. And it's not such a good Kal Vachomer that maybe a habit needs time to sink in. And maybe there is a rate of learning which you can't fiddle with so easily. And to say, oh, if I cram it all into a shorter time, I'll know it even better, that's not a Kal Vachomer. All right.
Can't we say that the difference in times so accounts for this? Meaning,
explain.
It's understandable that when we look at the shore, we see that it gores 3 times, so it reveals a nature that's already there.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, the same thing as if I listen to someone say Shimon Esrei 3 times, and they say, and they don't say Mashiv HaRuach 3 times, I understand the reality that's already set in. But to kind of give edus to a new reality that's changing, maybe you need 30 times, but the concept of, you know, habituating and having, condensing the time, maybe still could be consistent through both cases, meaning seeing
it could be.
3 times.
It could be. So you don't have to find your Beinu Peretz's objection to be Mukhrach.
Right.
You could say, all right, I understand that there is a different system here, but still it's true. Now, I'll mention again of Shlomo Fisher. He doesn't... It's a coincidence, so to speak, they're mentioning him 2 days in a row because he doesn't write on so many dapim in the Gemara. The whole Sefer and all of Shas is 2 thin volumes. Happens to be that we're mentioning him 2 days in a row, but it's not going to come up on every daf. But he has a short piece about this in the section of Sefer and Bava Basra, because as I mentioned, there are comparisons drawn in many areas of Shas. So in the third parak of Bava Basra, we talk about Chezkas Abatim. So he has a piece about this, a short piece. So I also said yesterday that his Hebrew writing can be a little cryptic. So he doesn't fully explain this. It's a relatively short essay. But he says that he thinks that the position of the Maamar Rutenberg could be that he understands that it's about Hergel, that it's about creating a new habit as opposed to Shor Muad, which is about revealing something that's there. But he thinks that when it's about creating a habit, the Kal Vachomer is still true. And maybe the Kal Vachomer is more true. That maybe if it's about creating a habit, then even more so if it happens in a shorter period of time. That it's more effective. And that's why the Magen Avraham is going to raise the question that it doesn't seem like we paskin like Rav Meir, that we can contract the time period. So if some official will tell you, yeah, that's good, because indeed Shor Muad and Mashiv HaRuach are different. And even if we don't accept the Kal Vachomer for Shor Muad, Itaka works for Hergel. It works for creating a habit. And that's where my Roman Rutenberg is coming from. So this is just an interesting Machlokas Lemaisa, which ties into where we're at, so I didn't want to let the 30 days pass before we talked about it a little bit, so this seemed like a good time to bring it in. Again, because Tosfos on Daf Beis Amud Beis also touches upon the issue of what exactly Muad is doing. The Tosfos about Milsa Gavorche, take a look at that. But just to add a thought or two about this, so can't dismiss this idea that you can contract the time period, because it is in Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, so we don't want to dismiss it. But Lulei de Mistafina, if you had asked me logically about this, I would have said for even more of a different reason slightly different from Rabbeinu Peretz, that the whole thing is surprising. Because it's not just a question of whether you can advance your learning process and cram things in. But the whole idea of 30 days, presumably what it means is that 30 days is a time period where habits can be formed. And it's interesting because particularly just in the past few years, there has been a increase in literature about what does it take to create a new habit or to break an old habit, and how long does it take. So there's a lot of literature about this. I think it ranges somewhere between 18 days and 200 and something days to create a new habit, depending on various factors. But it could have been reasonable to assume, let's say 30 days is what it takes to create a new habit. So the idea that that translates into times of tefillah is a little trickier, because first of all, the calculation is difficult, as the Chasam Sofer points out, that if you want to say how many times you'll say Mashiv HaRuach over the course of 30 days, so it's going to depend, because some days you have Musaf, and some days you don't. So it's not just 90 times 3. And then if you want to use the same system for Tein Talamata Levracha, then it goes the other direction, because you don't say it on Shabbos. So how exactly are you calculating how many tefillos? So it's not pashut to say that it's 90. But even if it were, it just seems hard to understand where that number comes from. 30 days is a number that we find in halacha. It's a difference between something old and something new. But where does 90 times come from, or 110 times come from? The idea that the number of times you would have said it, especially when it seems somewhat random, because if we apply this halacha both to Mashiv HaRuach and Tein Talamata Levracha, so it's going to be a different number of times that you do over the course of 30 days. So how does it make sense to say that one of them needs to be this many times and one needs to be that many times when it's the same process we're talking about? So I think Lulei Demistafina, if it were up to me, I would not have come up with this idea of contracting it. And I would have thought that 30 days means that the time period over which, if you're davening, you're going to say it one way or another, that's the koveya. And we don't really have the ability to extract a certain amount of times from that process and say, okay, this is how many times you would do it in 30 days, and now if you do it that many times, it's going in a shorter period of time, it's also going to work. But again, it is in the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, not Chalila questioning that, but just a Misvara would have perhaps come at this from a different angle. It's interesting, and we'll say a little bit, Alpi Derech Hadrush, that this does not help for, the whole concept here does not help for saying Ha Melech HaKadosh during the Aseres Yemei Tshuva. Because, as the post can point out, you can't wait 30 days because the whole thing is only 10 days. So you're not going to have 30 days to establish a new habit. And you also can't do this 90 times trick, because when it comes to Ha Melech HaKadosh, so you're going to have to say it with the bracha in order to get the flow there of HaMelech HaKadosh, and you can't say a bracha 90 times randomly. So you won't be able to do this. And if you're going to say, okay, I'll do it, but I'll change it to Hashem instead of saying God's name, so that's also not going to work, because you're not going to be creating the habit because you're using different words than you actually use. So it's not an Eitzah. When it comes to the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, you don't have the 30 days to develop a new habit, and you don't have this Eitzah of trying to contract the process into less than 10 days. And perhaps, Alpi Derech Musar, maybe that's especially appropriate, because I've always commented that the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, part of the whole effect of the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, is that you can't be on autopilot at all, that you have to be disrupted from your routine, and the slichos has that effect, etc., etc. So the fact that you have to make this change in your very otherwise habitually set davening sections, and that there's nothing you can do to change that, that there is no etzah to make the modification into a habit, maybe that's fitting. That should be that the Aseret Yemei Teshuva, you can't be on autopilot at all. You have to be especially on guard. So maybe that's appropriate for that. So it doesn't work for the Aseret Yemei Teshuva, but does it work for where we're at now, for Mashiv Ruach Amer HaGashem? So that's this machlokes. It has to do with how you understand the concept of Shor Mu'ad and whether or not it is applicable to something like this. But again, at the end of the day, it is in the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramas. It's not something that we can take lightly. Just while we're on this topic, I'll add one more thought, and that the Stipler, this is not from the Sefer, but this is a story that's told about the Stipler, that they say that there was a woman who came to the Stipler all distraught because she was worried about the health of her newborn child, because the baby was not willing to nurse on Shabbos and Yantif. It's a chumrah. And so if it would only nurse during the week, he wouldn't nurse on Shabbos and Yantif. And she couldn't get him to nurse, and she was very worried about his health. And so they said, okay, go to the rabbi, go to the Stipler, and ask him what he thinks. So whether or not you are a proponent of going to Talmidei Chachamim when you have a medical question, so in this case it worked, because the Stipler reportedly said to her, said, the problem is you should wear your weekday clothing when you try to get the baby to nurse. That the issue is the baby doesn't recognize you in your Shabbos clothes. So you're wearing Shabbos and Yontif clothes, the baby doesn't recognize you, and therefore that's why he's not nursing. And she did that, and it worked, and the boy grew up to be to go to Lador. That part I added on to the story. But they all lived happily ever after. So, how did he know this? They said, hey, Stipler, did you go to medical school? How do you know this? So he responded, no, I didn't go to medical school, but I learned Bavakama. So there is a Gemara that says that when we're establishing the process of Mu'ad, that the Mu'ah doesn't necessarily carry over from weekdays to Shabbos. And the Rishonim explain that what's the significance for a shor of Shabbos or not. It's that maybe he's shaken. He doesn't realize that the people are the same people because they dress differently. So no offense in comparing your baby to a shor, but this is essentially that on the less developed level of intelligence, apparently this makes a big difference, and that could be what was going on here as well. So just while we're on these Mu'ad points, thought I would throw in that story. Okay, so what did we talk about today? So we talked about the Machlokas about Mishasa, about the question of whether the Mishasa is Chayiv, how that's either Grama or Grami. With the Balakelev is Chayiv, the Rambam's Chatzin Nezek, and the Ravid says, so not if it's Mu'ad, and Machlok is whether Rambam would agree with that or not. We mentioned a couple of understandings in the Rambam, either that it's never going to be considered a Mu'ad because it always requires this external force, or because it's a shared liability, so it's a Shutfus issue. And we also questioned whether we're talking about the nezek of the monetary damage to the clothing, or we're also talking about the medical bills, which generally we only apply when it's an adam doing the chabala, and how that all fits in over here. And then we talked about this question of Mashiv Ruach Amer HaGashem, the Shulchan Aruch bringing this idea that you rely on your habit. If it's been 30 days, you can assume you changed your mind. If it hasn't, then you haven't. And the Shulchan Aruch quoting this idea that you can contract the process and say it 90 times in a shorter period of time and have that work. And that's based on Marami Rutenberg in Bava Kama, commenting on Bava Kama. And the Tosfos Ben Peretz in Bava Kama disagrees. He says, no, this is about Hergel, it's not about revealing what's there. And therefore, the Kal V'chomer on Daf Chav Dalet and Rikhek Nigachosa of Kirov Lakol Shekain doesn't necessarily apply. And we mentioned Shlomo Fisher said Adarabi thinks that that is the whole point, that even if it's not true by Shor, it is true here, because by Hergel the Kal V'chomer is more applicable, he thought. And we mentioned that the whole notion of changing it from days to times is maybe a little bit hard, especially because it'll also cause a question of really, do we mean 90 times, or we should say more than 90 times, because it'll be Musafim and like over that period of time, and so that's indeed how some said it should have been 101 times, something like that. It shouldn't have been 90 times. Also mentioned that for Tein Talmud Levracha, it would go in the opposite direction, so it's hard to say that all these numbers are all still true. It seems like it's really a 30-day thing, however many times that ends up being. And we also added that for the Seres Tamei Tshuva, you can't use this because the whole time is not 30 days, so you'll never get into an established habit. And you can't contract it because you have the problem of Hashem's name over there, so that's not an Eitzah. I said, maybe that's good, because maybe that's the whole Yisod of a Seres Tamei Tshuva, that you're not supposed to be on autopilot ever. And that fits, that you can't work into a habit situation. And then we just added the story of the stipler who figured out that this woman was having problems nursing because she was wearing Shabbos clothes, and that there was a comparison there to be drawn to Shor HaMoed. Okay, so we will stop here. Again, thank you for your flexibility. It would be good if you could look at the Makoros now. And God willing, we'll see you tomorrow at the normal time, and we'll look at Parshas Lech a little bit in half Torah.
All right,
everyone.
Have a wonderful day.
Anybody want a munchkin for coffee?